We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And for the second year in a row, Denver takes a commanding 3-0 lead with a comeback victory in LA. It was quite similar to the first two games of this series, but it was Denver's offense that really shined in the second half. Aaron Gordon, it's funny, I wanted to play Denver. And one of the reasons why is because I think that they will show like what you really are, what a championship team will show you what you really are, Mike. And Aaron Gordon, especially in the first half, really showed us that we were not big or athletic enough around the rim. We couldn't rebound well enough. Jamal Murray, you know, a lot of the shot creation, although we've done a good job on him this series. Jokic has been tremendous. Their shot creators are great. And there's a level of consistency and organization that like they punish you for every mistake that you make. And so, Mike, it was a similar game with kind of a different twist. What was your view on last night's game?
So the game itself was like the series in that the third quarters have been this massive pivot point. And I'll sometimes, as I've said to you guys before, I'll sometimes do a post-game question that's a little bit targeted towards a point that I might have seen in the way of leading in like, hey, the Nuggets out-rebounded you by X. How big of a issue was that? But if I really want to just kind of know, hey, what is the player going to think or what is the coach going to think, I'll keep it pretty general. And so I just asked Austin Reeves basically what happened. And he said, our third quarters have been atrocious. And so that certainly is true, right? In game one, it was 32-18 Denver. Game two, it was 25-20 Denver. Game three, it was 34-22 Denver. Or sorry, game three, 34-22 Denver. And then you get to sort of why. And I asked LeBron that later, and his answer was, we spent so much energy in the first half building leads, defensive intensity that we have to come out in the third quarter with not much energy, or we have come out in the third quarter with not much energy, kind of lose track to attention to detail that we had in the first half, and then he gave some credit to Denver. So my interpretation of that is like the Lakers fastball, the Lakers when they're flying around defensively and playing well, can not only hang with anybody, they can play better than anybody, including Denver. What they can't have is that level of sustained excellence that it takes to win not just a playoff game against a great team, and Denver is a great team, but a playoff series against a great team. The Lakers fastball was good enough, as we saw in March and April, to beat most teams, especially when those teams weren't playing and weren't giving you their fastball. And Denver may not give it to you for like 48 full minutes, but they'll give it to you for like 42. You know, it's so rare is it that Denver is not playing well in this matchup. And it's super impressive to me because I have seen every playoff series, of course, the Lakers have played since 2008. And I can't remember an opponent sustaining excellence as much as Denver does. Not a single one, not the Celtics in the finals in 2010, not the Nuggets in the conference finals in 2009, not any team, not the Miami Heat. In the finals in 2020, they sustain it to such a great degree. And to me, I've been talking about Aaron Gordon a lot. Like that, we can get into that as the game goes on, and Murray and Porter Jr., but it's Jokic. Jokic, who has now entered into the let's start thinking about when we're going to put him into the top 10 all time type of debate. Like if they continue this and he keeps winning, and just the way that he's playing, the playoff numbers that he has are like Wilt Chamberlain-like, and that's about it. So it's just, he has gotten into that stratosphere. And I think that the Lakers, and this is where it gets down to the whole year 21 LeBron thing, like LeBron cannot, nor should he be able to sustain his top level for a full game. And even when Anthony Davis mostly does, you know, LeBron is still the leader. And it, again, not that simple, but that's what I think, that it's gotten to a point where like LeBron looks up and sees Denver continuing to sustain minute after minute, and Murray and Porter hitting, and Jokic, and it's just not enough. Like what they have is not enough to beat Denver. And like, I'll get into rebounding later. That's, you know, that's been a passion project of mine this series, and the lack of size that the Lakers have, and how it's the wrong matchup to be small like that. But ultimately, you know, even if you did have a little more size and that let you hang a little more, I think it comes down to that difference between Jokic and, you know, year 21 LeBron. Not to simplify things too much, Darius, but that to me is kind of the feeling coming out of the building in game three.
One of the reasons why you've never seen a team sustain the way that the Nuggets have against the Lakers in all the years you've been covering the team, Mike, is that the other team has rarely, if ever, had the best player. So you watched the Lakers play with Kobe Bryant pretty much all of those years. And the years that you watched where the Lakers did not win the title, they got beat by Boston. I would still argue Kobe might have been the best player, but Boston had the better team. All of those other series that you watched when the Lakers were going through the playoffs, they had the best player.
Yeah.
It's hard to overstate how much having the best player inspires the rest of the team to be able to raise their level and play with confidence for just extended stretches. And on any given night, the thing that I think the Nuggets are showing the Lakers is that on any given night, it can be another player who raises their game and proves a little bit too difficult for the Lakers to match. Jokic is that North Star, and he is that player who is imbuing them with confidence in ways that is very difficult for a Lakers team to overcome.
Yeah, it's a great point, and one that we probably, not just we, everybody that talks about Jokic, like at this point, he gets a ton of praise and completely all earned. But the level to which his teammates are comfortable in knowing that they're going to get shots and knowing where they're going to come from and knowing that they're not going to be missed when they're open, that to me is this massive connective tissue between them. That it's like, how does Michael Porter keep hitting contested long twos? And it's just because he's just free shooting them, you know, because he knows if he misses it, no problem. Next possession, if he's open again, Jokic will find him, or Jokic will just go down and score inside at the rim, Pete. And like, to Darius's point about having the best player, you know, my first couple of years, Kobe absolutely was. And then, you know, Kobe was banged up and injured, his knee, especially in 2011 when they lost to the Mavs. And I think he averaged around like 22 points, like mid 40s shooting percentage, only a couple of assists. And remember, the Lakers got swept. And there was a similar feeling. It was a long time ago. All of a sudden, I'm like, wait, 2011 was 13 years ago? Damn. But, and so I'd have to pull up some of the stuff that I wrote at the time. I'm sure Darius was blocking away at Forum Blue and Gold and having great takes that not enough people were seeing at the time. I certainly was. Pete was doing his thing on Twitter. So it's just like that feeling. And even though Dirk was nowhere near what Jokic was, that was peak Dirk. That was where every shot that he took was going in.
That playoff run was nuts. He caught, yeah.
Yeah, no, Pete, what I remember about that series and just being in the building was anytime the ball came close to Dirk's hands, it was like automatic bucket. Didn't matter from where, didn't matter if it was like a turnaround from 22 feet or from 24 feet, or if you try to contest him or double him too quick, he would take his one long dribble and finish at the rim. Like everything was going in, and he didn't make teammates better in the same way, but I do think that he enabled the confidence of the rest of those players on the Mavs, where like they knew that they could get just such a he was going to play as perfect as he could for himself, and it made the team function a certain way.
That's the payoff that you get from a good season of basketball, from a season of getting used to each other and getting better. And again, Jokic in a postgame presser, I think it was after last night's game, was talking about, you know, it takes 2-3 years to learn how to play with each other and just all of the tendencies. And those free and easy type of shots are the result of becoming a well-oiled machine. And that's a combination of guys playing together for multiple years. And then also like knowing what they're doing within that, like, oh, they're doing this, then we're going to do that. Having that best player on the floor who, if everything goes wrong, can just hit a filthy step back jumper that gives you 3 points out of nowhere. Those are like the super demoralizing shots too, right? Where you've played really good defense and you're, you know, maybe if you get that rebound, you got a chance to cut it down to 3. Well, now it's 8. You know, those are the type of shots that Jokic hits. And to your point, D, we've seen a lot of those with Kobe and with LeBron and just with a lot of Magic, great players over the years. And so that said, I feel like that's part of the value of playing them last year, is that playing the eventual champion, it gives you an idea of like, this is what you need to do. This is who you need to be. This is the standard you need to be able to hit. And so that resulting free and easy basketball that Denver plays is the result of a really talented team, but that's also very, very well coordinated. Basketball is a great sport where 5 different players have to be on the same page and making reads at just the fastest speeds you can imagine. And at these split second decisions, D, that, you know, really separate good teams from great ones. So let's take a break here, come back and keep it going.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great thanks to Dr. Jonathan Gabay. Dr. Gabay is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Gabay can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Gabay works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Gabay, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I do think that there are a couple of simple things here that are just so obvious. And like the rebounding battle, 51-38 in game three, 36-34 in the one the Lakers barely lost, right? 49-40 in game one, going back to March, 47-31, February, 50-39. So the Lakers' second and fourth best rebounders are Christian Wood and Jared Vanderbilt on like per 36 minutes. One is AD, and Jackson Hayes is three in terms of, again, per 36 minutes. So those guys not being there is part of it. And then the choice, though, to go smaller and to kind of play with the three guys off the bench being Dinwiddie and Vincent and Prince. And like when Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. and Jokic are playing all around between 37 and 40 minutes, there are just so many times out there that the Lakers are at a deficit. In that place. And I think that's been huge. I do think the Lakers at least win a game, right, so far out of these three, if they kind of address that. So that's one thing. But a thing that's a little harder to define that I've just felt by being in the Nuggets press conferences with Malone, or kind of watching the way that the Nuggets interact on their bench and watching the way the Lakers interact on their bench, just the usually when you have a team that has won the year before, especially if they swept a team and then they have to play them again, that team, which in this case would be the Lakers, is the one that is the wounded dog that is fighting and clawing and biting. Denver plays the Lakers like they got swept by the Lakers last year.
Yeah, what does it mean when they're not?
Yeah, this is another thing that I have not seen a ton. Like the Lakers have played some teams before in back-to-back playoff series years and like crush them both times, Utah. Now that was back in the 9-10 years. Like that was just a big talent gap, but like Denver has been able to sustain hunger. And I think they relish playing against the Lakers. I think part of it is that they look over there and they see LeBron James, like the LeBron James, he's out there. So there's never a guard that's dropped when they're out there and seeing LeBron. The purple and gold jerseys, maybe that's part of it. Anthony Davis, the talent that he has. But there is something, there has been zero drop-off in intensity, even from we won games one and games two, maybe a little letdown in game three. And by the way, we knew it wasn't coming. We said it on the last pod. We knew Denver was not going to drop. But that is not super normal. It's just not. And I'm very curious to see how Denver sustains if they're able to beat the Lakers again. But that's just something that I have noticed that is pretty unique to these 2 years and these two matchups, at least from my experience and watching kind of year-to-year playoff basketball in the NBA.
I think it's a matter of belief, Mike. And I think the Lakers do not have the same level of belief against the Nuggets as they do against pretty much any other team. I've seen them play top teams in the league year after year after year. And Pete, every time they play a Milwaukee, or every single time they play a Boston team, or any of the other top teams in the West, and even you see it when they have this effect on teams that they play, there is a certain amount of like, we can beat you. And the thing I saw in getting back to game three, in the second half of game three, when Denver made their push again, and I think it was in combination with the fact that the Lakers really needed some good performances from their secondary players, and they did not get them. And I don't want to pin this on D'Lo by any means, but I think the fact that he was missing like wide open threes and like the shot quality that D'Lo was getting.
Yeah, he can't go scoreless.
And him missing those specific shots, some of the shots that Austin was taking and missing as well, which were open shots. Those shots have a way of deflating you. D'Lo is such a swing player for the team that it felt like when it was understood that he didn't have it, that they were going to need something from him and from Rui, it felt like, for the Lakers to win that game. And when neither of those things were really there and Denver made their push, that's when it felt like we don't have any answers for this specific team, and all of the sort of trauma from the previous 10 losses, and particularly from the game two loss where they marched them down from 20 points behind to come back and win that game. I thought that that caught up to the Lakers, and that has been sort of an underlying thing when the Lakers have played the Nuggets over the last two playoff series. Am I off base there to you?
No, certainly not. I think, though, that if you look at it in aggregate, I don't think anyone besides LeBron and AD, and we could talk about LeBron and AD's specific games, but I don't think anyone beside them have had a particularly good series. And I think that when you have a situation where it's everybody is struggling at the same time, sometimes that's a sign of something bigger. Just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of what AD was talking about. You know, there are several possessions where we're like talking to each other after a defensive breakdown, or there's on offense, there's just a lack of a lack of assertiveness and tempo. You know, one thing, Mike, Darvin had brought up this year that they had come up with a stat called limbo rate. I think it's a limbo rating. Limbo, the idea of kind of how long you linger in between possessions. And there's a certain tempo that I know Darvin wants the team to play with, that's part of it too, where it's just, there is a simple aspect of you got to run the floor every possession. And this wasn't a team that ran a lot, more than it had to over the course of the season. So when you get into a high-level playoff series and that consistent running, that sustaining, LeBron has talked about this in a press conference of that, hey, we got to go from that 18 minutes to 30 minutes to, you know, 40-plus type of minutes in terms of sustaining, Mike, that is a big factor in this too.
Yeah, so just to continue to smash this point, but like the LeBron – in year 21, sustaining against Denver and Jokic for that long and those many minutes, sure, and the load that takes is he just can't, you know?
So we knew how old LeBron was going to be going into the season. This is kind of my point of why it was great to play them last year too. We saw what the final boss was, the team that beat everybody in terms of, and so I don't feel like we listened to a lot of the lessons of that, but the team around LeBron has to have motor and that sort of verve. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here.
Yeah. This again, that was like my, in, I guess to it to get to an extent our, but I'm just without trying to speak for you guys, that was my whole feeling going into this year. We know LeBron is going to have at least a little bit of a drop off energy wise. What are you going to do about it? Who's going to play a certain way around him? And the rhythm that the Lakers got in the way they were able to get some wins and get up to 47, and you know, they figured out for the most part their offense, and you know, with Rui and Austin and Russell starting next to LeBron and AD. And I think that to kind of build this into the point, Pete, that we were just talking about with Denver and the way that they play and their sustainability. So if Rui Hachimura is not scoring, if D'Angelo Russell is not scoring, shots aren't falling, whatever, matchup isn't going for them, what else are you going to do? What else are you going to do to help the team? Are you going to go crush the glass? Rui's huge human, super athletic. Are you going to keep Aaron Gordon off the glass? You know, D'Lo, are you going to go and just be a great playmaker? Assist to turnover ratio. He had 2 assists and 1 turnover in his 25 minutes, you know. I think that Austin, this is part of what I like about Austin and why I'm kind of generally higher on him and defending him. Austin will go figure out something else to do. He'll chase Murray around. He'll scrap. He'll get to the rim one time. He had 4 steals. Like he's trying to do other stuff, even if it's not always perfect, because he's not a great athlete relative to other NBA athletes. But if from the Denver perspective, Jokic is always going to do, he's the metronome, right? Everything's going to be great that he's doing for the most part. But if Aaron Gordon isn't hitting his shot on a particular night, no problem. Like, he's got a lot of other stuff to go to in the bag. And I thought that, like, that to me is part of what against Denver is this fatal flaw for this Lakers team, is that if something isn't going for, you know, Gabe Vincent or Dinwiddie or Prince off the bench, also, like, those guys can, you know, they can help kind of on both sides of the ball, but not to a great extent, especially against a Denver team. And that's where I get back to that starters. Like, if Rui is not going to score in the series, then, and the Lakers are getting crushed on the glass, does he have the know-how or is somebody going to him and saying, I need 10 rebounds today. Mm-hmm. I just need it. Like, that's the thing. And in Rui's mind, because he got asked about it at practice today, and forgive me for jumping all over the place here, I asked him a question about the rebounding, and his kind of counterpoint was, well, yeah, but I'm out trapping Murray or trapping Jokic, or we're in rotation basically. And that's when Aaron Gordon is, you know,
he's not wrong, Mike.
Even if he's 100% right, okay, like, still, then go get 2 offensive rebounds. Like, there has to be more that can be done by the role players doing role things that I don't know that they've had all season.
Can I just make one small point? The Lakers were not in that circumstance a whole ton this year. It's not really the style and concept of the defense, right? It's a more of a contain, we're going to let this guy shoot an open type of shot, which prevents you from being in rotation as often. And so my point I've been making throughout the series about doing new things in the playoffs. It's not the concept that's bad. It's that from a player perspective, I think there's a certain I'm not used to doing this. I'm not used to getting a rebound out of this particular rotation because I haven't been making this rotation all year.
So it's not only that, the circumstances in which you have to execute these things while playing in the style that Denver is forcing you to play in against their specific players, you're going to fail more often doing it. It's why Denver's been winning, not only against the Lakers, but against everybody. So when you get in rotation, it's harder to box out Aaron Gordon. It's harder to track him. This is the natural way of things. So Anthony Davis had 15 rebounds. No one else. What did LeBron finish with? I think 8, 7. For the longest time, though, no one had more than 5. He had 6. AD had 15. LeBron had 6. No one else had more than 5. I think Rui had 5. Denver's entire front court, they all had 10. And Jokic and Gordon, I think, had 15 apiece.
Well, Darius, just to underscore your point, like for the series, right? LeBron is the second leading rebounder for the Lakers, and he's grabbing about 6 boards per game. Like Rui is at 3.3. You know, Austin's actually at 5.0, but Russell 3, Prince 2.7, Dinwiddie 1.3. Like there isn't anybody else that grabs rebounds. Like none of these guys do that. You know, and this is the question again. I've asked the question after every game. Nuggets are killing it on the offensive glass, or Nuggets are, and it's just like, well, you got to work harder. You know, you got to box your guy out. It's like they're not. It's not going to happen. They're not going to win those. If in that case, I cannot box out Rui Hachimura if he wants to get a rebound. I can't do it.
Right.
LeBron's a massive human being, and on a critical possession in the fourth quarter, LeBron. It's an open court play, and LeBron is under the basket, and he's wrestling with Jokic. And Jokic just basically swim moved him, put his elbow in LeBron's chest, moved LeBron to the side, and grabbed an offensive rebound. He got a putback. LeBron fouled him and won. And that's LeBron James. There are few players who are going to win the ground game against LeBron. Jokic is one of the dudes that's winning the ground game against LeBron.
LeBron usually does that to other guys.
And so Jokic, that's where we get back to Jokic and his all-time greatness to me, where the fact that he can do that to LeBron is one thing. But LeBron, you know, 4 years ago, whether it's, he might, 4 years ago, LeBron might lose that kind of a battle to Jokic once, but he had been flying in the whole game for other rebounds, you know, from different spots. And if LeBron noticed that that was the weakness, he could shut that water off himself. He could go over to the faucet and just crank it off. And that's where I keep getting back to the sustainability of how much can LeBron do over 48 minutes or whatever he's playing, 42 minutes or 40 minutes. And he can't do the rebounding thing against Denver on top of the playmaking, on top of the transition game. And I feel like, Pete, you're going to make a counterpoint.
No. I want to support your point, which is that LeBron getting older was an obvious thing, for which it means everything else has to get sharper, right? In order to maintain where we want to go. And this hasn't been a year of that. So let's take a break, come back and keep it going.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So, Pete, not only do things need to be sharper, you need to support LeBron in the way that he needs supporting. And this series, to this point, and it happened in game three, but it also happened in game two and in game one. I feel like it's dumb of me to continue to like stand for Jackson Hayes, because I feel like the argument that I make for Hayes makes it sound like I think he's going to be the difference in some way, shape, or form.
A configuration. So Mike was just making the point. I'm sorry for jumping in. Mike was just making the point about these guys don't get rebounds. And so I've been in a coach in positions where it's like, okay, we have a deficit at this. Now what? Now what do we do, knowing that we don't have guys that really do this naturally? Then what are the choices that we make out of that?
And the choices the Lakers have been making is to ask their guys to play harder and rolling out guards and wings. So Hayes didn't play in the last game. And this is the thing that I was asking for before the series started, and we literally haven't seen it once, and so I actually don't know if it will work or not. My sense is that it will work in some ways, and in other ways it won't work, because like you'll probably not have the offensive spacing that you want, or the perimeter shooting, or whatever. Like, Denver is a difficult code to crack, obviously. But I feel like if you're not rebounding at all, and you're running into issues with size on the back line, to remove your only backup big man from the rotation entirely, that's a choice. It's almost like an acknowledgement of, we don't even view that as a problem.
Right.
And if we do see it as a problem, we're going to solve it by being better in these other places that don't necessarily address this specific issue, right? Like, if we're better on the perimeter, if we have more shooting on the court, if we have more point of attack defense, then maybe the rebounding won't matter. Now, I don't think that that's really a thing. And I haven't talked to the coaches, and I know that that's not a framing that's been asked to them specifically, so we don't necessarily have answers for that. This is a thing where I don't think we're going to preview much of game four, but game three felt a lot to me like our philosophy is to play this specific way from a coaching staff, and we're going to play that way and go down playing that way. I saw the same thing with Frank Vogel. Honestly, I saw the same thing with Mike D'Antoni. I remember Mike D'Antoni being like, yeah, we're going to start Earl Clark and bring Pau Gasol off of the bench for some of these games.
So this is where we kind of get into we've been kind of teasing at autopsy, right? Without really wanting to get into it, you know? Every game sort of builds on, like, you can, I think if you're listening right now, right, you've listened to us talk about this all year, and it's like, it's a pretty consistent message, right, about what the style is versus about what, and I just think that Denver specifically is the absolute team that breaks like this kind of idea of what this thinking of, not just small ball, but like spacing and shooting and, it's why I've been so obsessed with the rebounding as to can you grab a rebound when somebody's in your space. That's just a small idea. It's more just the, can you take away some of the easy stuff that this certain opponent is going to get? And I watched the Lakers beat the Nuggets with their same three best players in the bubble, with a certain style, like in a certain heft, and I've watched other teams try to beat Denver, and I know the game's not that simple, but there's been this push the last couple of years, I think, almost league wide, not everywhere, but in some of where the 3-point line and the game has evolved and shooting and spacing and small, and I just think that playoff basketball, the rules really haven't changed that much. The Nuggets shot 5-for-28 from three, and the Lakers shot 5-for-27 from three in a playoff game. And I get so sick of it in the regular season. Well, which team made more threes than the other team? Like, I don't think playoff basketball has changed as much as some want to say that it has.
And Mike, look at the scores. Look at the scores of the games, of all these games. These are 90 scores.
The rim is still 10 feet tall. And in the playoffs, what happens? Everybody defends. You don't have as much space to shoot. You don't have this is the thing that I think is the most underrated that I learned from listening to Kobe Bryant talk about games. You don't have the legs. You don't have the legs to hit wide open shots in the playoffs, even if you're damn open. So why? So that, did you guys watch Indiana and Milwaukee to play tonight?
I've been out. So
I watched some of it.
So some of it, but like down the stretch, some of the best 3-point shooters in the league, like wide open shots, yep, couldn't get anything to fall. Why? Because they're exhausted. Like, so I just, this is what eventually basketball gets to, and that hasn't changed. And so when the other team misses one and you've got to do like Aaron Gordon, who just grab, or Jokic, who just grabs it and puts it back in, boom, that swings the whole game.
You just
game.
Work your ass off too.
It swings the whole game.
However, like 20 seconds, yeah, and so it's, fuck, and it's not, still scored.
And it's like, it's not just that point. And forgive me for the soapbox stuff here, but it's the, if you don't have the two-way players, if you don't have enough of the guys that can impact the game on both sides of the court and the other team has more, like that's going to things are going to happen a certain way that's predictable. And the, like when, with LeBron and AD, this has been, I think, the Lakers cheat code when they've had the right personnel around them. And when not, like in this case, that then we see what happens in the other direction. So it's a, we'll have a lot more time to get into that, but I do feel like that's been something that Denver has exposed to a degree that not many teams can, even with LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
There's also partly with LeBron getting older, there's more missed layups. It is harder to rotate and leap in the air and battle with the Aaron Gordon, right? It's harder to put a body on a guy. It's even harder to anchor your feet, like you were talking about, D, and maybe get a little bit lower and root out Jokic a little bit better. You know what I mean? All of it's totally, it's difficult to do. And so that's part of it. And that's part of being sharper, is supporting, like LeBron's still brilliant and still able to produce in these high level games, but also is going to make more mistakes. He's going to make more endurance mistakes. He's going to miss more box outs. He's going to do things like that, that while still producing at a certain level. But there's also a question of, we've struggled on offense enough times to where there's a legit question of, do we have a guy that can break down the defense at the highest level as well?
They don't. They do have guys though who can score still. I love that we've done so much talking about why the series is 0-3. I'd love to be able to talk more about like the things that the team is doing well. Like I'd love to be able to sit here and talk more about Anthony Davis and everything that he's doing. Jokic has been the best player in the world this series, and Anthony Davis has been doing his damnedest to match him in basically almost every single way. AD is not a hub of offense. He's never going to get the assists the way that Jokic does. He is not a fulcrum in that same way, so it's going at it a little bit differently.
There is. So three games, AD, 32 points on 62% shooting, 13.3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.7 blocks, 0.7 steals, and 2.7 turnovers.
He's just been an amazing basketball player. And of all the players who have been ready for this series, AD has been ready. And forget the players, like of everyone with the Lakers who was ready for this series, AD was ready. We can talk about LeBron, and LeBron's been great in his own way, but in game three, I saw slippage defensively. I saw slippage in terms of his focus on the back line. I thought early in the game, he got comfortable getting into the passing lanes and gambling. And then he did that more throughout the rest of the game, and there wasn't as much payoff for that, right? And those are the types of things where you can't make mistakes against the Nuggets and expect to skirt by too often. You get to two in a row, the next four or five mistakes that you make, they're capitalizing every single time. Yeah. And that's a dangerous game to play against a team that is this disciplined and this confident and this understanding of what they're going to be doing on both sides of the floor, Mike.
If I can just make one more point, or just accentuate what Darius was saying by bringing up AD and how great he's been. Game two specifically, Pete, it wasn't just him, but I felt like he was the real reason why the Lakers took the lead, you know, and like why they had a chance to win at Denver. And if just one thing goes their way in the fourth quarter in a different way, then the whole series is different. Like they win game two, maybe they come to game three, maybe Denver doesn't have the completely unshakable confidence and the Lakers are feeling a little better about themselves in the third quarter, right? And maybe it's 2-1. So it's not like the degrees to which we're talking about the Lakers, I feel like a lot of what I've been saying has all been on the negative side, right? Oh, this wasn't good enough. That wasn't good enough. And the margin was pretty slim there. And I think a lot of that was because of the brilliance of Davis and kind of LeBron knowing how to support that. So I don't want that to get lost in this for somebody that takes so much heat and shrapnel when he's been consistently like the seventh or eighth best player in the league this year at worst. He has brought it every game, not one single off time. He has shot 52, 74, and 61% in his three games while creating his own offense at times off the dribble. He's hitting jump shots. So I don't want that to get lost. And like the defensive side of the floor too, he's done a lot. Nobody can guard Jokic. He does it probably better than most. So just wanted to once again try to emphasize that briefly. What does it mean? I guess let's save that whole conversation for after whatever happens next.
Yes.
But it does need to be emphasized like that for the Lakers to be that close against this team, and AD's had a pretty big role in that.
Yeah, AD's been brilliant. He's so good at so many different aspects of the game that I think that, you know, for example, the DPOY discussion and who's the best defensive player in the world. He has such an offensive burden that, and he's such an offensive hub for the Lakers that, yes, technically, if you just want to discuss the defensive end, I totally understand. Hey, there are guys that are more consistent from possession to possession on the defensive end in terms of they're going to rotate and they're going to. You know what
I'm
saying?
Their motors are higher too.
Yeah. Their motors are higher too. Yes. But part of that is this is my like indignance about getting mad at the guy who's actually carrying the couch while everyone else is standing around holding Dixie cups, like being like, hey man, go faster. And it's like, yo, somebody put down your cup and help pick up the other end of the couch.
To your point, just like how much better is AD on offense than everybody else considered in the defensive player of the year category?
So think about this. The guy that's awesome at carrying the couch is also like a spectacular dancer, right? Just out of nowhere. He's just great dancer. And you guys are setting up for a party. He's moving around the couch, right? Getting things set up. But I bet you he'd dance a lot better if he didn't have to carry all the goddamn furniture before he had to go dance. So I think that last year's Denver series left us a roadmap for this year that we didn't follow particularly well. I think the basketball gods are also blessing us with leaving us a roadmap for next year and going forward and kind of what I think we need to look at. But next thing is next. So we will be back after tomorrow's game, game four at home against the Nuggets. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yeah. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.